Well, not such a good weekend for LSU fans. Baseball team loses 2 out of 3. Softball team gets swept, but the beach volleyball team finished 3rd in the country. We'll recap it all. Plus, we'll recap the, it went from the thrill of victory to the agony of defeat in 22 minutes at Louisville. Plus, the NBA playoffs. What will game number 4 hold between the Warriors and the Rockets? All these stories coming up on a busy Monday. Today, May the 6th, the year 2019.
The 1-1. Hit high and deep to right field. Giving chase is Servideo, and this ball is gone. 3-run blast for Antoine Duplantis, his 8th home run of the year. That makes it 15-13 here in the bottom of the 9th.
At the logo, comes left. One-on-one with Iguodala again. 6 to shoot. 5 to shoot, 4 to shoot. Harden, a straightaway 3. Good! James Harden drills the 3! Timeout Golden State! Rockets up 6, 49 seconds to go in overtime!
Bregman drives this deep to center field. Racing back on it is Trout. At the wall, looking up. See you later! A grand slam for Alex Bregman. And the Astros go up 6-3. The Astros with their major league leading 4th grand slam of the season.
Go ahead, Alex Bregman. Go get you some. How about that? And the Rockets, in overtime, win by 5 over the Warriors. The Warriors still lead the series 2-1. Game 4 tonight in LSU baseball. Man, dramatic, dramatic comeback only to, they exhaled. And Ole Miss took advantage in game number 3 to win the series. And with that, we say good afternoon. Hope everybody had a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous weekend. And away we go on a Monday. My main man, CD, back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios. He's spinning the tunes, pushing all the buttons, taking your phone calls at 337-706-0111. Yours truly, Studio 1A. CD, good afternoon, my friend. Did you have a good weekend, buddy?
Oh, Jordy, I had a fantastic weekend. Had a really good time, and my goodness, what a finish to that Kentucky Derby on Saturday.
Yeah, we'll talk with Michael Baychuk in hour number 2 about that. But what everybody's talking about, and I know some people get turned off by this because it's almost out of control, but the Game of Thrones is down to its final 2 episodes, and the impending battle between Daenerys and Cersei's heating up. Did you see what happened? Did you see what happened? HBO spending millions upon millions. They're making a movie every week. They're not making a TV show. They can do whatever they want. Some episodes are an hour and 10 minutes. Some an hour and 20 minutes. They're doing whatever they want to do. But about 17 and a half minutes into the episode, can't believe it. Cannot believe it. On a table. As Daenerys is observing Jon Snow being praised for his valor by his pal, and she's not too happy about it, right there on the table is a Starbucks cup. Yes, a Starbucks cup, CD. You know, one of the kind you get at Starbucks or you get at ShopRite. It's the little paper container with the little plastic top on it. Somebody left that there. And apparently the directors and all those people in post-production, it skipped their eyesight. But of course, the people that are out there watching this who are absolute Game of Thrones geeks saw it, and the world is turned upside down. So I don't know what happened. The showrunners, the writers, the director, the script supervisor, whoever, the post-production people, wow. Who did this? Who did this? unless they did it as a joke to see if people were really paying attention. I don't know, but the Game of Thrones in an uproar with two episodes left to go. My goodness gracious. All right, enough of that garbage. I do love the show, though. I really do. They got one of the... Oh, I can't say anything. I got to give a 2 days notice before I say anything, or else people will get upset with me. All righty, then. LSU baseball. Man. They were down and out. Down and out. They'd already, you know, they won game one on Friday, 8-3. Eric Walker had a bad Saturday. Just, you know, and LSU loses. Bats didn't work. Pitching didn't work. They lose 5. Oh, by the way, on Friday night, Zach Kess was brilliant. Brilliant. But I think hindsight is a wonderful thing. I think they overused him. I really do, because Zach Kess pitched 4 innings, and he kind of, you know, 55 pitches. They used him a little bit too much. Those 55 pitches took him out of the weekend. Took him out of the weekend. Yeah, it was important to get that game one win, but, man, they overused him. So he couldn't come in on Sunday when LSU really, really needed him. But to LSU's credit, in a game where they fell behind 7-0 in the third, 15-9 in the ninth inning it was, and everybody's leaving. Oh, let's go do something else. This is awful. This is awful. LSU ties it up thanks to back-to-back-to-back home runs. You heard the 3-run homer by Antoine Duplantis. And, I mean, that was pretty cool. That was pretty darn cool. Amazing. Then Cade Beloso hits one out, and then Josh Smith hits one out, and it's all tied up. I don't recall ever seeing 3 consecutive home runs in a game, much less with 2 outs in the bottom of the ninth to force extra innings. That's just incredible. Against an All-American closer. So crazy. So you think, well, this is destiny. LSU's going to win. And they're going to win the game, and they're going to win the series, and something that they needed. But alas, poor Yorick, it wasn't to be. LSU brought in closer Devin Fontenot to pitch the 10th, and he just struggled. He allowed 4 runs on 3 hits and 2 walks. Ole Miss led after the top of the 10th, 19-15, and that's how it would end. So LSU was 30-18 overall. 14-10 in the SEC. They're now in 4th place in the SEC West. Only 2 SEC series remain. And instead of kind of wondering whether a strong finish could put LSU into a top 8 national seed, we got to be realistic and see if LSU can bounce back and do what it takes to become a regional host. Right now, RPI 19. That's not a regional host. And they're going to take on a very hungry Louisiana Tech team tomorrow night at the box before they travel to Arkansas to face the team that leads the West, the Razorbacks, in a very, very significant and important series. Here's the lineup. Louisiana Tech, 6:30. That's where we are. 6:30 start, 6 o'clock pregame show. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Thursday, first pitch, 6:30 in Fayetteville. Again, 6 o'clock pregame show. Friday, 6 o'clock pregame show, 6:30 first pitch. And Saturday, the closer at 1, so the pregame show at 12:30. Yes, go to 103.7thegame.com, and they'll have all that up there for you in case. But it's a busy, busy week in LSU trying to figure things out. Didn't get any better on the softball field. Alabama completed the sweep with a 5-1 win over LSU on Sunday. They were just better. I'm sorry. They were better. LSU finishes the regular season 40-15 overall, 14-10 in the SEC. The SEC tournament begins with the first round of games on Wednesday in College Station. So Alabama goes on the road and gets 3 out of 3. Tip your hat and move on from there. Let me tell you what's coming up on the program. We'll delve much deeper into the LSU baseball series. Ben McDonald will join us at around the 2:32, about 20 minutes from now, in this hour. We'll have our Hot Topic segment to start off hour number two. Can't wait to see what CD has to say about that. We'll be joined by LSU's beach volleyball coach, Russell Brock. They fell just short of reaching the NCAA championship match on Sunday, losing in the consolation final to the USC Trojans. UCLA beat USC to win it overall. A third-place finish for the program, their best ever. We'll recap the events that took place at Gulf Shores. Yes, indeed. And then we will discuss the Run for the Roses. And for the first time ever, a horse was taken off the board, a winning horse was taken off the board due to riding impediment. And we'll discuss, I think they got the right call. But you know how it goes. You watch, for instance, I'm watching Golden State Houston. James Harden comes down the lane. Draymond Green has his feet planted outside the restricted area. James Harden lifts, goes up to shoot, runs right into and over Draymond Green. In the regular season, man, that's a charging foul every night of the week, all the time. Now it's the playoffs, and you've heard me say this year after year after year, they let him play. And they don't call those kind. And what was a very pivotal moment was a no call. Harden made the shot. They would have waved it off. Golden State would have gotten the ball in the regular season. But in the playoffs, they don't do it. They don't call it. The Kentucky Derby is the biggest, greatest, most grandiose horse race every year. And a lot of times they don't call that. There was no stewards inquiry into that finish, which you would see on any other day at any other racetrack with a $5,000 claiming race. They would have a stewards inquiry. If not for the jockeys filing a complaint, we'd have had the winner as it is. And we'll talk to Michael Bachok about the longest 22 minutes from the thrill of victory to the agony of defeat in horse racing history. So that's what's coming up on the program. So glad you've joined us. We'll take our first time out of the day when we come back. News for LSU basketball. No Will Wade news, but we've got news on LSU hoops. And we'll talk NBA playoffs next.
As a local business owner, you're busy. You don't have time to keep up with overly complicated accounting practices and tax regulations. You need Go Tax Resolution in Lafayette. Call us today at 337-420-1040. From the minute you walk into Go Tax Resolution, you feel like their only client. That's because their success is measured by your success. They'll provide you with the peace of mind you deserve. Get real help from real people. Call Go Tax Resolution in Lafayette today. Your go-to tax relief.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Minutes after the hour, welcome back. We're brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets, 59 of them in Southern and Central Louisiana, so good with so much stuff in there. It's like a mini, mini supermarket. It's got everything. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. My favorite one is in Dusson. My goodness gracious. They've got food everywhere. Just you name it, they have got it. Gift items. It is a travel destination. Well, you can spend several hours just walking up and down the aisles. Clean, pristine. It is fabulous. Yeah, ShopRite, Tobacco Plus, discount outlets. Highly recommend that you go check it out. They've got everything you need and then some. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. News coming out of the LSU baseball organization, LSU basketball organization, excuse me. You know, every 4 years you can travel overseas and get some work done. The last trip that LSU took overseas was to Australia in 2015 under head coach Johnny Jones. This time, this summer or early fall, LSU, not a bad gig here. They'll be in Spain for 10 days from August 12th through August 22nd for some preseason training. They'll play some club teams from the Spain area as to, you know, who they play and when they play. That's yet to be scheduled, but they know they're going there. This will be the first of two times LSU will go abroad before or during the 2019-20 season. LSU's holiday tournament this year at Thanksgiving time is the Jamaica Classic. So LSU's one of three teams reported going abroad in the preseason. Texas A&M going to Costa Rica, Florida going somewhere. That's yet to be determined as well. So Spain is pretty good. Meanwhile, LSU is putting the finishing touches on its 2019-2020 basketball schedule. New additions to the season are Mark Schlesinger's UNO Privateers, Northwestern State, and Liberty. I guess in case you didn't know this, you know, football teams get paid an awful lot in the non-conference schedule to come play at LSU. So basketball is the same way. UNO is going to get $82,500 for its game on December the 3rd. Northwestern will receive $85,000 for its game on December the 8th. And Liberty is going to get $100,000 for its game at LSU on December the 29th. So, previously scheduled opponents are VCU, the Jamaica Classic, Louisiana Monroe, East Tennessee State, and USC. LSU is going to be a part of the Big 12 SEC Challenge. Those dates and opponents will be determined later this summer. So at VCU on November the 13th, then they go to the Jamaica Classic, then ULM at home, UNO at home, Northwestern at home, East Tennessee State at home. Once again, not to be this guy, but that basketball schedule at home is ridiculously bad. You give the fans nothing to be excited about. I'm sorry. Liberty, East Tennessee State, Northwestern, UNO, ULM. So far. Now, if you get the Big 12 Challenge and you play in Baton Rouge, okay, that helps. But the rest of that schedule is awful. You play at VCU, you play at USC, you play in Jamaica. The home schedule is putrid. Putrid. But I don't know. I don't get it. I just thought they had more confidence and they would play a better schedule than that. But Will Wade, kind of it. And again, everybody asked me, what's the latest on Will Wade? There is no latest. You notice that the NCAA made an inquiry, a notice of inquiry into the Arizona program. Arizona didn't, you know, they didn't make their coach talk. They kept it all quiet. Now the NCAA's coming in. We'll see if LSU, with their jurisprudence, including the NCAA, in the interview process that finally took place, we'll see. We'll see. Still, there's a lot of woods left in that forest that Will Wade and LSU have to get through. But until then, the beat goes on. You notice there have been no announcements of any signees in this recruiting class. Now, you can read between the tea leaves on that and make your own approximation, guesstimation on it. But players aren't going to come if they think that the coach that they're going to sign with ain't going to be there. and they need some reassurance. So this is you know, the old proverbial between the rock and the hard place. And we'll see. We shall see. The NBA playoffs resume tonight, a doubleheader. Milwaukee at Boston. Milwaukee leads that series 2-1. And then the nightcap, the Warriors at the Rockets. The Rockets hold serve at home. Golden State leads 2-1 in that series. Steph Curry had a non-Steph Curry-like performance. It was all about Durant versus Harden. They were unstoppable, unguardable. But what sets Golden State apart is Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. And neither one of those played very, very well. And here's Draymond Green talking about Steph Curry and how he needs to bounce back. And he will bounce back, according to Draymond, in game number 4.
I know he don't make too much of it as a competitor. I know he's pissed with himself, and I think that'll bode well for us. Probably it's going to lead to some aggressiveness, and we like when he's aggressive. So I think it'll be fine.
I don't see Steph Curry with back-to-back bad games, but this is pivotal, and the Rockets are definitely in the Warriors' head. Make no mistake about that. The Raptors on Sunday beat the Philadelphia 76ers 101-96. That series now tied at 2 games apiece. Man, I like the Raptors. I like him in that series. The Nuggets yesterday beat the Trail Blazers 116-112. That series tied at 2 games apiece. So these semifinals are really, really good. And Nikola Jokic of the Nuggets, if you saw him, other than the fact that he's tall, you would say, oh, God, he just doesn't look very athletic. But, man, can that dude play? He's the best player on the court in that series. He just gets it done. He does it so effortlessly, so smoothly, but he just doesn't look like a ball player. He just doesn't. But, man, he gets it done. So the NBA playoffs are terrific. Again, Bucks Celtics tonight. Warriors Rockets following that one. Should be a lot of fun. We talked at the beginning of the show about LSU baseball losing 2 out of 3. A dramatic comeback in game number 3. 2 outs, down 5. They rally and tie it, send it to extra innings, and that was all she wrote. Fell flat on their face. Ben McDonald was there calling the game. And he will share his thoughts on this LSU baseball team. Can't get any consistent pitching. Wow. That's next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
With a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Well, you just never know in sports. And you just never know with LSU baseball. Game 3 of their series against Ole Miss. LSU falls behind 7-0 in the third. By that time, you turn the TV off, or close to it. They're down 15-9 in the ninth. You're walking away. Miraculously, the Tigers tie it, send it into extra innings, and then Ole Miss scores 4 in the top of the 10th to win the rubber match 19-15 as Ole Miss wins the series 2-1. Ben McDonald was here, there, and everywhere over the weekend, flew back in time for Sunday to call the game. On television, and he joins us now. My goodness, Ben, thanks for the time, buddy. That had to be a wild one to call, my friend.
Yes, sir, Jordy, it was. Good to be with you again. Yeah, I tell you, I've been fortunate and called a lot of games over the last 10 years or so, and I cannot ever remember a game like this. You know, I mean, Ole Miss was just on cruise control. It looked like it was going to be a blowout, and it was. I mean, you 10-1 at one point, and it was just over. And you know, and LSU, quite frankly, when they got behind early 4-0, there wasn't a whole lot of fight in them. But something happened about the fourth inning and fifth inning, LSU's offense really came to life and ended up being one of the more exciting games I've ever called.
Ben McDonald, kind enough to join us. My goodness gracious, LSU now 14-10 in the SEC, three games behind first place Arkansas in the SEC West. What was your takeaway? I mean, it was like some bad defensive plays, but they fought back. So you love that determination and never giving up. And then it's almost like they exhaled, and then poor Devin Fontenot comes in and just can't get anybody out.
Yeah, you know, it was a crazy game, and Ole Miss brings in their All-American closer, first-team All-American last year, Parker Kuraishi. He's given up one home run the entire season. LSU hits back-to-back-to-back home runs on him, you know, which is a one-in-a-thousand deal at that. Just crazy, you know, to tie it up. So you figured at that point that all the wind had just been sucked out of Ole Miss. I mean, you give up six runs in the ninth to tie a ball game up with your All-American closer on a bump. You got to think that all the air is just gone from Ole Miss at this point.
Right.
But I tell you what, you know, Devin Fontenot comes in, he walks the first batter, they get a couple of big base hits and turn around, and they got a crooked number on the scoreboard, put up four. And so Ole Miss showed me something, too. They showed me a lot of fight. Now, if I'm LSU and somebody else asked me this, what do you take away if you're Paul Maneri at this point? I said, well, look, you mentioned, I mean, the fight and determination to come back is a good thing. The other thing is the offense. Look, I mean, when you put up that many runs on that many hits against a pretty good pitching staff, look, that's good. I mean, you're happy about the way your guys fought back. You're happy about the way you hit the baseball and the runs you scored. Now, the disappointing thing, you mentioned it. I mean, you know, a couple of plays that probably should have been made. Josh Smith could have turned a double play. The ball kicks out in the outfield. It cost LSU four runs. I thought Marceau could have fielded that bunt and at least gotten an out of it, and he didn't, and the ball got by him, and it goes for a base hit. So a couple plays there that could have been made that would have changed the outcome for sure of the ball game. So you're disappointed in your pitching, you know, you're disappointed you give up that many runs. And I'm not taking anything away from Ole Miss, because to me they're one of the best hitting teams in the SEC. There's no two ways around it. And when they get smoking like they were yesterday, they're hard to beat. But still, you got to do better than that on the mound for LSU, you know. And so Peterson comes in, and he was outstanding for four or five batters. He strikes out four out of five, and all of a sudden he can't get an out, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it was a strange game from a lot of different angles, you know. So this just jabs it, you know, right in LSU's heart. This is a tough one, because just when you thought you were going to come back and win an unbelievable game, you end up losing it. LSU's got to regroup quickly, because Louisiana Tech tomorrow night is a good team. They're a top 50 team in the RPI. They're a solid team, maybe LSU's best midweek game of the year, you know. So they got to regroup quickly. Could be a big win for them, could move them up in the RPI, and then, as you know, you head over to Fayetteville, where that team in Arkansas is probably playing as good as anybody in the country right now. I think they've won eight of their last nine SEC games, so that won't be a joke for LSU over there.
LSU plays Tech on Tuesday, and then the Arkansas series is a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. Look, if I had told you LSU is going to be at home, they're going to hit 331 over the weekend in three games, I'm looking at possibly a sweep myself, and the fact that they lost two out of three is alarming to me.
Yeah, I totally agree with it. I totally agree with you on that, you know. And they win game one on Friday, you know, 8-3, and then it you know, it kind of gets away from them a little bit on Saturday, and so they've got to regroup, you know. And the difficult thing with this week is, not only are you facing Arkansas, you know, your pitchers that you're going to use, you need to win the game tomorrow. And you've got to be careful, because if you extend some guys tomorrow night, then they're not available for game one on Thursday against Arkansas. So you got to be real careful how you handle this. And LSU had the fortune of last week not having a midweek game, so they rested all their guys going into the Ole Miss series. So that's not the case this week, because they got to take care of Louisiana Tech, or try to, tomorrow night. So this is certainly the biggest week of the year, and I know we keep saying that, but it's kind of where it is for LSU right now. I mean, they're 17 or 19 rather in the RPI as of today, so they dropped a couple of spots, and so they're kind of sitting on the outside looking in my opinion, being a regional host. Now, the good news, they control their own destiny, and, you know, I'm looking at it like this, Jordy. If they win one in Arkansas and then beat Auburn two out of three, that gives them three more wins in conference play. So they go into the SEC tournament, you know, at 17 wins overall, which tells me there's work to do once they get there. And so they're going to need one of those runs, kind of like they had last year. Maybe not quite that good, but certainly probably go into the SEC tournament, win at least two ball games, and then they could be that regional host. So the good news is they still control their own destiny, you know, but they're going to have to play better.
cannot get anything of a consistent nature in your Friday, Saturday, Sunday starting pitching. One game somebody's really good. Sometimes it's Eric Walker. He struggles. Landon Marceau goes 2 1/3 innings, gives up 7 runs on 8 hits. So where does LSU go now? I'm sure they're anxiously waiting to see the health of Cole Henry. Let's see what Jaden hit. Again, you're down to your last two SEC regular season series, and you're still up in the air as to who you can count on.
Yeah, and I think that's the crazy thing about this, that LSU's actually have as many wins as they do in conference play and had a chance to win the ball game yesterday, considering everything that's happened. Because the frustrating thing for LSU fans and for Paul Menard is we still, and it doesn't look like we're ever going to see this team 100%, the team we thought we were going to put on the field back in the fall, the team we thought was going to start the season for LSU and have all these guys healthy. We're not going to see that this year because of all the injuries, and that's the frustrating thing about it. And I agree with you. I mean, it's tough when you're moving guys in and out. I mean, Hess is out of it now. We know that. He's going to be a bullpen guy. That's where he's going to be. So It appears that that's what it's going to be. It's going to be, Marceau. It's going to be Hilliard. And it's going to be Eric Walker because from what I'm hearing, Cole Henry may not go again this weekend. And also what I'm hearing is Jaden Hill may not ever go again this year, And so that's kind of where you're at. Now, I think there's an outside shot. I think the last news I heard is that Henry was going to try to throw a bullpen this week, see what it felt like. But, Jordy, I don't think because he's set out 3 weeks, I don't know if he's a guy you can just throw into the weekend rotation and say, go give me 6 innings. I don't think he's ready to do that. I think he could be a guy that could come in relief and maybe give you 2 innings, and maybe 2 weeks from now he could be a weekend guy for you as you start getting into the SEC tournament or playoff time. Mm-hmm. But it's not like he's going to roll in there this weekend and get you 7 innings on a start. That's not going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Ben McDonald, kind enough to join us. I guess the biggest story of the weekend, other than the great comeback for naught, was the work of Zach Hess, who came in on Friday and delivered a brilliant performance. 55 pitches, allowing 1 run, 3 hits, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts in 4 innings pitched. That's impressive.
Yeah, no, it is. And look, you could tell when he came in, I was watching on my iTablet, but you could tell the body language was different. He was happy again. He was in his environment again, in the situation that he likes, and that's coming out of that bullpen. That's where that kid is most comfortable. And look, everybody knew it, and the scouts know it. That's where he's going to be when it comes to pro ball. He's going to be at the back end of somebody's bullpen in minor league ball and hopefully major league ball as well. But LSU needed him to be a Friday night guy the last 2 years, and he gave it his best shot, and it was a mixed bag, and sometimes it was really good. But, if you read the interviews and you talk to him, he'll tell you, he just never was really comfortable with that role. And, and when you're talking about young kids, 21, 22-year-old kids, comfort factor means a lot. And I think Paul Menard did the right thing and gets him back to the bullpen where he's comfortable again. The disappointing thing is he threw so many pitches on Friday that he wasn't available for yesterday. And that's where LSU hurt. If he'd have kept the pitch count down to, say, 40 or 45, they could have rolled him back in on Sunday. And Hess went down and started warming up on his own, and Paul Menard, shut him down. He's like, no, you're not going in. You threw too many pitches, on Friday, so they shut him down. So that's going to be something I think if you're going to move Hess to the bullpen, you got to have him available, in my opinion, on the weekend. You got to get 2 outings out of it.
Exactly.
So that's going to have something they're going to have to manage better. So when you bring him in a certain situation, you keep the pitch count on a Thursday. Let's say he pitches on Thursday. We keep it at maybe 40 pitches where you can roll him back in game 3 of a series. Because to me, if you can only use him once on the weekend out of the bullpen, it's not worth moving him back. You got to have him for 2 of your 3 outings on the weekend.
That was my next question, and you answered it very, very well. So with that in mind, you've seen Arkansas play. They're leading the West by 3 games over LSU. What is it about Arkansas? What do they do well?
Well, I mean, nobody saw this coming. We knew they were pretty good. And last year's team was a team that, of course, made it to the championship series at Omaha, and they dropped the foul ball over and down the right field line. If they make the catch, it's 2 outs in the 9th inning. They win the national title. We all know the ball was dropped. It was not caught. Oregon State caught fire. They won game 2 and then went on to blow Arkansas out in game 3. And so it was a heartbreaking loss, and you wondered how the Razorbacks would recover from that. Well, they've responded pretty well even after losing some big-time players. And it's a good offense. I mean, Casey Martin leads the way. He's a young leadoff here, the shortstop, and he's solid as well. They have enough pitching. Their Friday night guy Campbell is very good. I like him. I'm not so sold on Saturday and Sunday guys. I think LSU can score some runs on those guys for sure. You know, in the back end of the bullpen, they have a guy by the name of Cronin down there, big left-hander up to 95. He's one of the best closers in the SEC. So they're pretty complete on the mound. They're not as good as they were last year, but they're solid. The offense has really gotten clicking lately for Arkansas. Well, I saw them early in the year against Ole Miss. Ole Miss went in there and beat them 2 out of 3 in Fayetteville, which is very hard to do. They didn't look like a great team, but something has changed since then. I think they've really hit on all cylinders right now. So, you know, LSU's going to have their hands full. There's no two ways around it. And you hope they can certainly win one. If they can steal two, then all of a sudden they become right back in that regional conversation again.
Ben McDonald, kind enough to join us, man. It makes for an incredible, and you'll be there, incredible SEC tournament. This league is loaded. I mean, loaded. Best in the country. And, man, with so much on the line, that's man, I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah, I tell you, it's always an exciting time. I was looking in the RPI right now, and there's 10 SEC teams in the top 20. In the RPI as of today. So it's just, it's crazy. You know, we do all this forecasting and we say, well, this series and that series, and they all obviously mean a whole lot. But the truth of the matter is, most of this stuff, 80% of it, it won't get resolved until we go to Hoover, Alabama. That's where, that's when you're going to know for sure. Now, you look at Vanderbilt, and they could probably go 0-2, and maybe Mississippi State, if they finish strong, they might be able to go 0-2 and still be a top 8 national seed. I think they're there right now. But the truth of the matter is a lot of these other teams, you know, like in Arkansas and like a Georgia and, of course, LSU and others, what they do in Hoover is going to be the big deal for them because everybody's playing for something. You're either playing for a top 16 and host at home. You're playing for a national seed. You're playing to get into the NCAA tournament, too. And there's going to be a lot of different storylines there, and that's why it always makes for some really good baseball.
As per your statement earlier, Paul Maneri has come out and said that Cole Henry will not travel to Arkansas this week, so LSU will be without him for the third consecutive weekend as LSU's fighting to host a regional. I don't think you can kiss a super regional host goodbye. I don't see them moving up that much. But, man, that's a blow, man. It just is.
It's a huge blow. You know, in my opinion, I don't think LSU can get – I may be wrong, and I hope I am, but – without Cole Henry down the stretch for LSU and eventually getting back into that weekend rotation role, I don't know if LSU can get back to Omaha, I'll be honest with you. I think the offense has been too erratic, and I don't know if there's enough starting pitching there. And it's not because of effort that the kids are trying really hard, but they need a real ace on the weekends. They need a real guy that can step up and say, okay, give me the ball. I'm fixing to throw 7 shutout innings or give up 1 run. And without kind of guy, it's going to be awfully difficult. So you hope – you pray if you're an LSU fan that Cole Henry, maybe this is the last weekend he sits out, maybe he gets his feet wet, you know, in the last series against Auburn, and maybe in the SEC tournament he gets his feet wet a little bit more. Maybe, just maybe, by the time they hit a regional somewhere that he can get back into that weekend rotation.
Ben, thank you so much, man. I know you're jetting it here, there, and everywhere, but we greatly appreciate the time, and as always, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Jordy. Yeah, I appreciate
All right,
it.
Buddy.
Take care.
All right, man. All right. Ben McDonald, the SEC Network, kind enough to join us. Cole Henry, not heading to Arkansas. LSU baseball fans on the edge of the cliff, trying to hold on, trying to hold on. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
And we are back at 52 minutes after the hour. Country House, a 65-1 long shot, wins the Kentucky Derby after that controversial ending. Maximum Security disqualified for impeding the path of two other horses. We'll talk with Michael Baitchak coming up an hour at number 2 about that. I think they got it right. And if it's called on a Tuesday at the fairgrounds, I guess you got to call it on a Saturday at the Run for the Roses. plain and simple. Shout out time to the Brobridge Tigers High School baseball team. They're going to the state semifinals in Sulphur. They beat Pearl River a couple of times yesterday, and they are moving on, heading to the semifinals. So good luck to the Brobridge Tigers. Yes, indeed. That's our U-triple-S-A Team of the Week. Way to go. Way to go. Nothing like it. Nothing like high school playoffs, right? I mean, there's nothing like it. For most of these kids, this is the last team sport they'll be playing in. Very, very few go on to play college ball. Very few. It's like my daughter had an eighth grade volleyball tournament over the weekend. I was in the gym two straight days from 7:30 in the morning till 5 o'clock in the early evening. All day, both days. And for some of those girls, that will be the last time they ever compete in a team sport. And it just means so much. And you can see the love they have for one another and the teamwork and the camaraderie. It's really special. And I know for all the parents of all the kids that are in all these tournaments, whether it be baseball, softball, track and field, golf, tennis, whatever it may be. And it's just a special time. And it is just so much fun. So much fun. Paul and Maneri has announced that Chase Costello will get the start for LSU tomorrow against Louisiana Tech. And it's very important. Very important. LSU currently ranked number 15 in the D1 baseball poll, number 16 in the Baseball America, number 17 in the USA Today, number 18 in the Collegiate Baseball poll. Remember, this was a team that across the board was ranked number one before the season started. But again, they've yet to have their full complement of players. That's just the way it goes sometimes. And LSU needs it. They've won 12 straight meetings against Louisiana Tech. Tech's last win, April 16th, 1987, in Ruston. Now, the freshman Chase has a 10.80 ERA in 13 and a third innings pitched with 11 walks and 9 strikeouts. He's going up against a senior left-hander, Logan Robbins, who's pitched 54 in the third innings, 3-3 with a 5.30 ERA, 45 strikeouts, 25 bases on balls. So this is important. How does Paul Maneri utilize his bullpen? Because you got the pivotal series against Arkansas. You're three games behind the first-place Razorbacks in the SEC West. You're currently fourth in the West. So a lot of work to be done. And they need to get it done quickly. Shout out to Antoine Duplantis. He hit 538 in the Ole Miss series. He was 7 for 13, a double, a homer, 6 ribbies, 3 runs scored. He raised his LSU career hits total to 330. He's now number 3 on the all-time LSU hit list. He needs just 3 hits to surpass Blake Dean for second place on the career hits chart. And he needs 23 hits to become LSU's all-time leader. That's Eddie Furness at 352. Duplantis became LSU's all-time leader in at-bats during the Ole Miss series. He now has 1,028 at-bats in his 4-year career. So he's setting all kind of marks. And can he get to 353? He needs 23 hits. He's got 4 games this weekend. We'll see. He's going to have to do some work. He's going to have to continue to put up to get on base, put up the numbers. I'm betting on Antoine Duplantis to get it done. So, again, 6:30, first pitch, 6 o'clock pregame show right here on your source for LSU sports, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Coming up hour number 2, Hot Topics. As always, Russell Brock talking beach volleyball. His LSU Tigers finished 3rd in the country. No shame in losing to UCLA and USC. No shame. Pretty good job. And Michael Baychuk on the run for the roses. Come on back. Hour number two, the Jordy Helfert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com is coming up next.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana's sports station, 1037 The Game. Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two on this Monday, May the 6th, and away we go. Busy second hour. Did you see Jimmy Buffett at Jazz Fest? Well, he walked onto the Acura stage at Jazz Fest wearing something a little bit different than his typical attire. In an homage to the New Orleans Saints, Buffett wore the old blind referee costume complete with a cane and two young women dressed in sensation costumes on his arms. Needless to say, the packed house at the fairgrounds went nuts. He threw a bright yellow flag holding an ice-cold brew. Then the dancers tore off Buffett's costume, revealed the floral Hawaiian shirt, and in only typical Jimmy Buffett fashion, he never put down the beer. And then he started singing his tunes, Cheeseburger in Paradise, baby. Jimmy Buffett, my man. At Jazz Fest. Let's do it like we do every day at this time of day. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Well, CD, I don't know where you're going to go with a controversial finish to the Run for the Roses. Not a very good weekend for LSU baseball and softball, and a Starbucks cup of coffee on the table at the Game of Thrones. I don't know where you're going to lead off, but fire away, big guy.
Well, I mean, you definitely kind of covered that with a lot of great fervor to start off the show, Jordy, about the Starbucks cup. So I'll leave that be. That I didn't watch it. I wound up catching Endgame over the weekend. I'll leave that be because I'm almost certain you still haven't watched it. So I'm not going to spoil it for you or the listeners at home who might not have caught it just yet. But we're going to start things off, Jordy, looking back what happened in a wild Friday night, both on the diamond and also on the hardwood, starting things off looking at LSU baseball. You okay with Drew Bianco flipping the bat on the home run Friday?
About that? Yes. Yeah, why not? What the heck? It wasn't a big flip. It was still a flip.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead. Let him flip it on his dad's birthday.
Yeah.
How about that? Yes.
On his dad's birthday, and then the next day, he gets plunked. Was that planned?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was. Go ahead. Dad said, all right, son, flipping it. He probably didn't throw the heater at him. He probably threw something a little bit less, but lesson learned. Dad, still a competitor. Yes, indeed. Love it.
Just amazing to see that, Jordy. And looking over at kind of what happened with that game Friday night as well. Zach Hess looked phenomenal. Wow. Man on a mission. Is Wild Thing officially back?
He is back, but they overused him. He shouldn't have picked that many. As Ben McDonald said in hour number one, who I refer to and defer to, you got to have him for two games. Would you like to have Zach Hess in the top of the 10th pitching
on course.
Sunday? Yeah, of course. So they threw too many. Shame on them. That was poor judgment. I love you, Paul. I love you, Alan, but that was poor judgment, man. Get him out. Let somebody else pitch. Save him for Sunday. Come on.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he would have tried doing that, but it was just such a close ball game. It was very situational. Of course, hindsight is 20/20 there, Jordy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now we got to look over Friday night. My goodness. That game between the Nuggets and Trailblazers, four overtimes.
Crazy.
You saw Jokic have an Iron Man performance over 60 minutes, just a couple minutes short of the all-time NBA record. It's just amazing to see that game. Was that one of the best basketball games you've ever seen?
I didn't stay up for the whole thing. I must admit, I cannot tell a lie. Yeah. I did see the recap of it, but that had to be amazing. Had to be amazing. Jokic, other than the fact that he's 7 feet tall, just doesn't look like a basketball player. Looks like a little roly-poly loaf of bread or something. Yeah. And but boy, can he play. He is a baller.
He looked outstanding, Jordy. It was amazing to see him out there performing at such a high level and, more importantly, being out there for so damn long. I mean, I know you've played basketball at a pretty high level as well, Jordy. What was the longest you were ever out on the court, like be it high school or college?
I think I played 2 overtimes in college, so that would have been a total of 50 minutes. 50 Jeez. Minutes. Yeah, that was a lot, but hey, you know, by that time you're like your adrenaline, you re-adrenalize, if that's a proper term.
You catch that second wind.
You catch that second and third wind because it's overtime and every possession counts. So man, I love overtime basketball. That's great.
It was like just I wound up being up and watching that game, and then about like probably after Jokic missed that first free throw, I'm like, okay. I'm turning them off, going to bed, because there's no way it's going to go to a fifth overtime. So I'm just going to leave it at that, and thankfully that's not what
happened. You did it. You were accurate.
Whenever it's like a 2-3-point game, you can usually kind of call it a day there. But the XFL wound up making some big waves, Jordy,
yes.
Announcing they were going to be working with ABC, the four-letter network, Fox Sports, for their inaugural season that's going to start in February. A lot like what it did the first go-round, a lot like the AAF. And it's definitely a little bit of a head scratch. I had a friendly discussion with someone about this earlier today, and I want your thoughts, especially considering the fact that they have a team up in the East Coast, up in New York, where it's probably going to wind up being cold for the majority of the season. Is February a bad time for a spring football league like this? And I'm using air quotes.
Heck no. Let them play. But the good news is they've learned from the Alliance.
Yes.
I mean, they've got.
Well, they also learn from their mistakes.
Yeah, you can actually find these games on over-the-air television.
Yeah.
Instead of in hidden places where nobody has it. So smart for them. They've spread it out so there's very little, liability or, you know, at stake for these networks. They don't invest that much into it. It's spread out a little bit. So smart. Smart on their part. Very good. Now just go get good players. And no gimmicks, no he hate me, and no race for the football to see who gets it on instead of a kickoff.
Yeah.
Play football. Play football. And I think they've learned from their past errors.
And I think it also helps with the fact that you have a guy like Oliver Luck that is such a smart football knowledge guy. I think he winds up probably helping out this game of XFL football be a decent alternative, especially when it comes to the spring, whenever everybody's kind of jonesing for football, even after the Super Bowl wraps up, you have it a couple weeks after. I like the idea of it as well, Jordy. The guy I was talking to just was not a big fan of it, largely because who's going to want to go out and watch a game in February out in New York City? I'm like, that's not the point. You got to think about it. Is like I would much rather want it right away and fill that immediate void rather than wait like a couple months, because then I'm not going to think about it, right?
You know, I'm of the other way. I like the NFL. I love college football. And when it's done, I'm ready for something new. I just got to see what kind of talent they get. Because, again, I'm not going to waste my time watching people who are inferior to what I just saw in the hottest sport out there, the NFL, and then, of course, college football. So I'm very much a skeptic of this. I've got to see it to believe it. But I like to watch really good talent, not a bunch of I don't.
I have to agree with you. Last one, Jordy, before I let you go, because we got a couple more interviews to get to in this second hour of the program. But, man, that Kentucky Derby finish, is it making you more interested to see what's going to wind up happening next week whenever it's in the Preakness?
I don't think there's a Triple Crown horse this year for sure. Look, I think they did it right, and we'll talk with Michael Baychuk at in about 22 minutes and get his opinion on it. I think they got it right. Again, if it's wrong at the fairgrounds on a Wednesday, it's wrong at the Kentucky Derby. I think they got it right. That brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the best hot sauce on the planet. Bring a little small bottle with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holford Show on 103.7 The Game.
And we are back. DC's little capital X on I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. My go-to stop. They've got everything you need for your travels, whether you're going 550 or 500 miles. Everybody in your traveling party will be thrilled. And they've got that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Best cheeseburger ever. DC's little capital Exxon. I like to stop there because I love to go to Gulf Shores, Alabama. And over the weekend, Gulf Shores became the volleyball, beach volleyball capital of the world. And man, oh man, what a showing by LSU's beach volleyball team. Their head coach, Russell Brock, kind enough to join us as the Tigers finished third in the country. Nothing to be ashamed of. Coach, congratulations. What a heck of a run. And how fun was it to see all those purple and gold Tiger fans getting out of their beach chairs and getting out of the laying out in the sun and coming to watch you play beach volleyball?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thank you very much for having us. Honored to be on and chat with you. And, you know, from the weekend, I think that's, you know, it's so impressive, LSU sports fans in general. But in that environment, I think it's it's one of those match made in heaven types of things where you just have, you know, a bunch of Tiger fans out there getting sunburned and screaming and having a blast and just having a lot of fun in a really good environment with some really high-level competition. It was great.
I got to tell you, I'm watching with my daughters, and they're like, man, I had no idea. They said, Dad, I had no idea. This is really, really cool. And you start off, you take care of Pepperdine. I don't know how in the Sam Hill Stetson did what they did, but they did, and then you took care of Stetson. So you're sitting pretty sweet. I mean, the momentum was right there for you.
For sure, yeah. I mean, you really can't control what other teams do, but obviously it worked out really well in our favor in the grand scheme of things that Stetson came out and played well. And, you know, that's one of the things we're actually talking about it today. It was hot, you know, and it was challenging. And those teams that come from the West Coast that live in, paradise, they don't get a chance to deal with those environments very often. And, you know, when that's natural for you and you can function well in that, you know, that can be an advantage. And that's one of the things about our sport is the weather and the climate and wherever you're playing is always going to be a part of the equation, and you have to be able to adapt wherever you play.
You lost to UCLA, so you're in the consolation final. You have to, you know, it's a winner survive, loser eliminated, and you take on USC, who was the number one seed. And I'm watching you going, okay, your first pair gets the win. Your second pair on the back end, the pairs 4 and 5 get the win. You're 2-0. You got to get one more win out of your first pair, second pair, third pair, and you advance to the national championship game. Man, I guess that was the strength of USC. They're top three, right?
For sure. Yeah, we knew coming into that match that if we played well, if we did our jobs, we would have a good chance to win at the 4 and 5. It definitely wasn't going to be a walkover, but we just felt confident with our scouting report and our matchup that we could really compete with them. And then we also knew that their 1-2-3 were really strong. I mean, the previous weekend, they had done the same thing to UCLA. They lost the 4-5 and came back and won the 1-2-3. And their one pair is for sure the best in the country. And, you know, we feel like our one pair, even after close this weekend, proved that they're the second best team in the country, because UCLA is the other top pair in the country. And we had them on the ropes before that match got shut down. So you have, you know, basically 1 versus 2 playing against each other to see who was going to win that whole team duel to get to the NCAA championship match. So it was a great place to be, and we knew that we would have to play. We'd never defeated the one pair before, so we would have to play really well to do it. And I thought we battled. I was really proud of how our team battled at the 1-2s and 3s. But just, you know, the only people left we're the best teams in the country. And
yes,
there was only going to be one team that was left standing at the end, and we went toe-to-toe with them and just came up a little bit short.
Historic year. You cracked the top five for the first time in program history earlier in the season. You finished with a program record 31 victories. And just to let everybody know, UCLA swept USC 3-0 in the national championship game, so the Tigers come in third. I am just amazed. I cannot fathom the shape that those young women are in, running around in the sand, jumping up and down, diving for the ball. I just cannot fathom the work and the effort that goes into that. It's just amazing.
Yeah, they are genuine athletes for sure, and it's you know, it's a challenging surface just to walk around in, much less to play that sport. And then you tack onto it, you're doing it for 3 days straight against the best competition in the country. So, you know, it's a great environment. It's a true test when you get to that point of the season for people to really determine, you know, who are the best teams in the country. And it's an honor to be there representing LSU and to be able to pull out some wins and put on a good showing. You know, we're genuinely pleased. Obviously, we know that there's a little bit of meat left on the bone, and we're mm-hmm. excited to get back and get after it again next year and put ourselves in a better position to make another jump.
It hasn't been that long that this program got evolved. And to see
correct.
Where you have come in such a short period of time, man, you have got to be, I know you're not satisfied, but you've got to be a little bit proud of how quickly you've come in this journey.
Yeah, I think it just says a lot about the character and the mentality, the drive of the players who we brought in and to be a part of this program. And I'm proud of them. And it's clear that they are proud of what we have created together. It is special. It's a lot of fun. I'm really glad that this year particularly we had a lot of people come out to watch, and I know with it being on ESPN and having a full year of kind of build up of people knowing that it's going to be available on that network, we know that there was a lot of people that were watching, and
it was great.
The expectation
yeah.
of like the exposure that we've got to the LSU fan base, even that part of it, we're excited about next year for our second year to be on campus and
yeah.
kind of to continue to build that with that momentum, because a big part of our ability to play well is you hear that go and you feel that Tigers as you're playing and
yeah.
and you those
that
fans
cool.
that are rowdy and getting involved, it was really, really powerful.
I think what set the stage, Coach, is, you know, you're on court four and court five, and both of your pairs lose the first set. Very close, 19-21, 17-21, and you're going, okay, we got some work to do. And to their credit, Bayer, Lijon, York, Damanski all came back and won in three sets, and that set the tone. Man, that place was rocking.
For sure. Yeah, that was, you know, we felt like we had a great game plan, and we knew that we were capable, and it was absolutely, you know, those four players that were on those courts did not waver when you dropped that first set. They understood the task that was ahead of them and what it would take to be successful, and they committed to it. And obviously, with the help of the fans, we were able to win those two matches in three and really allow that momentum to build and put us in a position to push them to the brink. And really, like I said, couldn't be more proud of
yeah.
of how that group played on that day.
It had to be a difficult when you huddled everybody together at the end of it after a tough, tough loss. It had to be a tough moment. I'm sure emotions were running high. I mean, so much work put into it. What did you say to the girls as you were huddled up for that last time?
You know, we just really talked about the fact that there was a whole lot to be proud of. You know, when we walked out onto the sand that day and there were only three teams standing, it's hard to look past the missed opportunity that was there in front of us, but it would be a shame. It would be unfortunate to not recognize the achievement that we made as well. Thanked our seniors, you know, for their contributions to get, because when they arrived on campus 4 years ago, we weren't the third best team in the country. We weren't ranked. We weren't a destination that people would aspire to go to. But they were absolutely critical in the process of building us to that point. So a lot of gratitude, a lot of thankfulness, obviously some disappointment. And the only other piece kind of we use as motivation is it was third year we've been there. Every year there's only one team that finishes standing. The other two teams, it's really easy to pinpoint regret, things that you could have done or should have done or might have done that could make you a little bit better. And that's what we pointed to. I said, I want you to feel that. I want you to understand that, because we have lots of ways that we can improve, and we don't have much farther to go with our improvement to be the last one standing. So, you know, it was a good chat. It was an honest chat.
That's
and it
awesome.
Was mostly celebratory, but absolutely, you know, pointed us towards a direction that we can be a little bit better.
Russell Brock, the LSU Beach Volleyball coach. The Tigers finished third in the country. Of your top 10 players that you had out there on the sand, how many of those are seniors?
We actually have three players that were in the lineup that that are seniors, and they technically have some potential eligibility remaining, so we'll have to see how many of those actually aren't going to be returning. But we absolutely are in a position to be reloaded for sure. And we have a great recruiting class coming in as well. So, we have high expectations for next year, and look to make, the LSU community even more proud of our performance about a year from now.
When you get back there next year, and I'm counting on you, I'm taking some vacation time, and I'm going to be right there, and I'm going to have some fun and cheer you guys on. That was awesome. You've got some fans in this household, and you've got a lot of fans elsewhere that that have gravitated to your sport, man. Congratulations. Thanks for the time. Go enjoy some time off for a minute, and then get back to it, buddy. Thank you, Russell Brock.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, buddy, you take care. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Now the race is on, and here comes pride up the backstretch. Heartaches are going to the inside. My tears are holding back. They're trying not to fall.
Well, what an eventful Saturday it was, as for the first time in Kentucky Derby history, a disqualification to race riding occurred, as Maximum Security was disqualified from first by the racing stewards, placed 17th in the 145th running of the Kentucky Derby. The stewards took up to 22 minutes to declare runner-up Country House the winner after deciding that Maximum Security interfered with several horses when he drifted out from the rail on the final turn. Let's go to our horse racing expert, who I'm sure his phone was blowing up, Michael Bakeshock, kind enough to join us from Bakeshock Racing. Michael, I guess the question is, did they get it right?
Yes, they did.
Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. You know, it's a judgment call. It's not something that is black and white. It's not even as black and white kind of as, you know, was the receiver's feet in when he caught the ball? Because, you know, we can zoom in on that and kind of clearly see, more clearly at least, you know, it's more of a, did he have possession of the ball kind of thing. And, you know, sometimes you're going to agree. Sometimes you can argue the other side. But in this case, there's no question that Maximum Security impeded the run and interfered with War of Will, who then interfered with Bodie Express and Country House and maybe Long Range Toddy. Therefore, it cost one of those horses a finishing position. And that's by rule. You have to disqualify that horse, even though everybody could see there was no way that Country House was going to beat Maximum Security.
Mm-hmm.
However, He cost, he being maximum security, cost War of Will at least, you know, the chance to run better than his seventh place finish. Does anybody out there that watched it believe that War of Will wouldn't have run second or third or fourth or fifth? No, I don't think so. I mean, so, you know, you cost him a better finishing position. And by rule, there you have to make that call. I'm not saying those are the best rules. You know, European rules run under a different kind of system. You know, if that horse was not going to win, then, you know, you would not take him down. But, yeah, I think it was the right call. And I also think not only was it the right – well, it was the right call – I think really moving past that, you know, we racing really wasted and is wasting an opportunity to say, hey, guess what? We got this right. Here's why. Because we value safety. We value fairness. And this is not safe and it was not fair. And that's why we reversed it. Yeah. Unlike the NFL, which let's just bring up one of the calls that people may remember. In the Saints-Rams game, you know, what happens if the NFL takes 30 seconds and somewhere in Washington or New York and a referee says, hold, wait, hold on, it was 1 second. That sure did look like to me and 100 out of 100 people a pass interference call. Let's reverse that because it's going to affect the outcome of the game. And they didn't. And look at all the heat they took for that. Racing, goodness gracious, this is one thing that we do right. You know, every race that's run every day at every track, there are three stewards that are watching the replay and deciding whether the race was run fairly or whether there was a foul. And, you know, if they think that there was, a horse gets disqualified. You can disagree whether, you know, the judgment of whether you think that the horse fouled or didn't foul, but you know, we should be pushing that up and saying, this is something we really do very well at horse racing, and we lost that opportunity when the stewards after the race, you know, they read a statement, and as my friend James Caldwell said to me this morning, it was like a hostage statement. I mean, they read it, and they got out of the room, and they took no questions. And when they should have been answering, because we were on the right side. They were on the right side of it. But, hey, that's another lost opportunity for racing. But, answer your first question. My judgment is I've never ridden a horse. I personally think they got the call correct. And it's, unfortunate for the outcome.
You talk about the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat all within a 22-minute time frame. My question is this, watching it, is that who's to blame? Is that the horse's fault? Is it the jockey's fault? How does that work?
You know, I've never ridden a horse, especially one that weighs 1,200 pounds. Right. It's going 30 miles an hour, going around a turn in a sloppy, slippery track, and we were getting tired. I don't think that it was the jockey's fault, but, you know, it didn't look to me like he was purposely steering the horse to the outside part of the track. But that happens almost every day at a racetrack. You know, a horse is going to engage. Maybe he was trying to move him out to engage Country House, who he thought he wanted his horse, Maximum Security, to see Country House, to see that there was a challenge coming. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. I don't know. Because when a horse, when they're, you know, five or six paths different or lanes different like they were going into the turn, Country House was probably in lane six or seven, and Maximum Security was probably in lane two.
Right.
But he had the lead. You know, Saez can see that horse out of his eyes, but he wanted to make sure probably that Maximum Security saw Country House because they respond when they're challenged. Now, it didn't look to me that was the case. It looked to me like the horse decided, I don't like something that I'm seeing or I saw down on the rail in the infield, so I'm moving away from that. It looked to me like more he got a little spooked, but it could have been a combination of the two. Jordy, I just don't know.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. But either way, whether the jockey decided or the horse decided or they both decided simultaneously for different reasons, he fouled War of Will, and that's the end of the story. Now, what are the ramifications and how do you rectify that? And that's how the stewards rectified it. By rule, they had to disqualify him.
Well, Michael Baikshak, kind enough to join us. You know, look, you watch NBA games and calls in the regular season change come postseason. I saw James Harden run over Draymond Green outside of the restricted circle 99.9% of the time in the regular season. That's called a charge. In the playoffs, it was a play on. Mr. West of that owns Maximum Security or trains Maximum Security says, you know, this race is so big, the whole world is watching. He was shocked and surprised that this happened. But in fairness, right, a call is a call, and it should be the same whether it's a podunk race in wherever and the biggest race in the world, right?
Yes, that's true. We all know that's not the case, right? I mean, your example just pointed out, you know, we all know and we've all seen situations where on a Wednesday night SEC game and there's a charge or a foul and it gets called, and then we're in the title game in the SEC tournament and it doesn't get called. You know, why is that? I don't know, but that is the reality. The difference is here, and what Mr. West is probably referring to is that the process as it works in horse racing, Jordy, is once a race is run, the three stewards who are watching the race from different video angles, and we're seeing on our televisions, they're watching from head-on, pan shots around the turns. They're watching from just different angles. Mm-hmm. After a race is run, if they see something that they think could be a foul, they immediately post what is called an inquiry.
Okay.
That only the stewards can post an inquiry. That didn't happen here.
Right.
In the 2 minutes before the jockeys got back to the finish line and lodged their complaints, the stewards had decided that they didn't see anything that was worth them posting an inquiry. That's concerning to me. That's more of the, this is a big game situation. Uh-huh. We're not gonna say anything. Here's the rub. If Flavian Pratt, the jockey on Country House, and John Court, the jockey on Long Range Toddy, had not lodged an objection, this race would have never been changed.
That's right.
The results would have never been changed because we already knew that the stewards were not going to further review the race. They had said, we didn't see anything. We're good to go. The jockeys were the ones that caused them to reexamine the race. That's concerning to me. That's the referee swallowing the whistle.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And they were not prepared at that point to take another look at it because it was a big. If that race was on, as you said, a Friday afternoon, $10,000 claim at the fairgrounds,
right,
immediately there would have been an inquiry sign posted. Whether you know, and that horse would have 9 out of 10 times been disqualified. Nine out of ten, you know. But the thing, the difference is the inquiry sign posted by the stewards would have been immediately posted. It's like the NFL, all scoring plays are reviewed by somebody else immediately, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what the stewards are doing, and they kind of whiffed on that, you know. And it's concerning to me that if the jockeys wouldn't have lodged a claim of foul, if they would have taken the position of Tyler Gaglione, the jockey on War of Will, the horse that was fouled, his position was, well, you know, I almost went down, but It's just not my place to, you know, lodge an objection in a big race. And, you know,
Michael, let me ask you this, because Gary West, the owner of Maximum Security, says that the Kentucky Derby is greedy. Every other horse race in the world, the Kentucky Oaks, the Breeders' Cup, every other race in America starts 14 horses. The Kentucky Derby starts 20. Is that too many? And is that a reason for something like this occurring? Or is that just hogwash?
No. No, I mean, look, no, that's, I don't even want to go where Mr. West is, okay. The agony of, you know, defeat in the thrill of victory taken away, you know, a lifelong dream. He's got to be feeling a lot of different things. It's not because we run 20 horses. We've never had one of these situations in the Derby before. So you would think if it was the problem of running 20 horses, then we would have, you know, objections and all that. Okay. But we don't. They run 20 horses all over the world, you know, in Australia, Hong Kong, and Europe on a regular daily basis. So it's not 20 horses. It's maybe some part of the jockeys, you know, that are used to running, all want to run towards the lead and trying to, you know, get position. And that's probably more of it. But no, I don't think it's greed by Churchill Downs. Now, look, they sure could have one starting gate that fits 20 horses. Right now we have two, and there's a little issue, you know, between the 14 and the outside gate, the 15, because there's a lot of space between those two. I mean, that would be a great first step. Hey, let's get a starting gate that fits 20 horses so they're all equally breaking with the same spaces between them.
Makes sense. Maximum Security not going to run in the Preakness. Who impressed you in the race? If anybody.
Well, War of Will impressed me because it sure looked like to me that if he would not have been impeded or fouled by Maximum Security, I think he was going right past him. He had a lot of momentum, and he swung off, you know, the turn, and it looked like, you know, if his momentum – I mean, Jordy, literally, the horses collided. I mean, and it's just a miracle, thank God. It's a miracle of racing gods that a horse – that he didn't go down because his hoof at 30 miles an hour and his leg hit the back of Maximum Security. So he really impressed me, especially coming from the one hole or the two post position, which is a terrible place. You know, he was able to get a good position, and he was making a run. Whether he was going to win or not, I don't know, but I guarantee you he would have finished ahead of Country House.
Gotcha.
So he impressed me. Maximum Security impressed me. You know, he was able to take early pace pressure, and then re-break basically at the 16th pole when we thought Country House was going to go right past him. You know, he started widening his advantage in late stretch. That was extremely impressive. Obviously surprising to me was Country House, you know, who had been beaten soundly in his last two races, the Louisiana Derby and the Arkansas Derby, by Improbable, by My Standards, by Spinoff. And he just ran the race of his life. Maybe he, you know, you could say he moved up on the slot, but he ran in the slot in his last race, and he didn't run a world-beating race. So he was very impressive. I think those are the three. You know, Code of Honor, I think I may have mentioned, if it was sloppy, he would really move up. His pedigree just really shouted that he was going to run big in the slot, and he looked like he put a nose in front of Maximum Security as Maximum Security was drifting out. It looked to me like Code of Honor on the rail got ahead of him, but I think his pedigree also, you know, kind of won out in the end, and then he kind of faded because he didn't really want to run that long. So those are the four, you know, that kind of to me. And look, Tacitus, he had a really tough trip, and he still kept coming at the end.
Right.
And he's going to be a horse, I think, to beat. That's Bill Mott's other horse, you know. He'll be the horse probably to beat in the Belmont because he'll really appreciate the much longer, the extra quarter of a mile that they'll get there.
Michael Baychuk, just when you thought you saw it all, you see a first. How about that? We'll always remember this one. From agony, from the thrill of victory to the agony of defeat in 22 minutes time. Unbelievable. Man, thanks for the time as always. I didn't do well in this thing at all, but hey.
Neither did I, Jordy. I whiffed on the Derby completely.
Yeah, I did. I did not do well at all. But, hey, the Preakness right around the corner, buddy. Thanks for your time. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Thank you, Jordy. Appreciate it.
Okay, buddy. Take care. Michael Baychuk, Baychuk Racing, great handicapper. We both whiffed. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
our off-road vehicles are built for this. We're built for hitting the trails as the sun comes up, for odd jobs and bales of hay, for kicks on a long dirt road. So, how do you become built for this? By getting to the Ready to Ride sales event and finding a new Can-Am off-road vehicle for a great deal. Get to your local dealer to save up to $2,500 on select 2019 models for a limited time. Certain restrictions apply, subject to credit approval. See your dealer for details.
Don't put your life on the line when you dig. Do what the pros do. Respect the marks. Dig with care. And before you dig, call 811. Louisiana One Call.
It's here, your weekly reboot podcast, available right now at 1037thegame.com and via the free mobile app. Just click or tap on demand and prepare for the new week. What's on tap for your favorite programs and franchises and everything that happened this weekend? I'll tell you what it means. I'm Ben Love. Plug in to the weekly reboot podcast. It's available now on demand at 1037thegame.com and via our free mobile app. The weekly reboot podcast is presented by Cigar Cove in Broussard.
At Indeed, we understand that when it comes to hiring, it's important to have a large talent pool to choose from. But sometimes too many good options can be overwhelming. That's why Indeed doesn't just give you access to a large pool of job seekers. We also offer screener tools that let you instantly narrow down your search. Hone in on hiring with Indeed. Experience Indeed for yourself today and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting at Indeed.com/promo. Terms and conditions apply.
Yo, Steven, you ready to go?
Yep, just need to pick up 777 from the lottery.
Can't we get it later?
Are you kidding? What with my connection to the number 7 and all?
Oh, right, I forgot.
Been there my whole life. I was born on July 7, 1977. I grew up on 7th Street. Even my name is connected.
What?
Take out the T in Steven. What do you get?
7.
Bingo.
Make 7 a part of your life with 777, the new $2 instant scratch-off from the lottery. You could win up to $15,000. Must be at least 21 to purchase.
You can always score big by being a member of the 1037 The Game Clubhouse. Here's what's going on now.
Right now in the 1037 The Game Clubhouse, enter to win tickets and dinner for two to see Ronnie Millsap at Cypress Bayou Casino Hotel, a gift from Mr. Lester Steakhouse or Mabel's Kitchen, and a gift card to Prejean's.
Win tickets, gift certificates, and more by joining the 1037 The Game Clubhouse on 1037thegame.com or on the free mobile app.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 1037 The Game.
Welcome back. Hooters just makes you happy. They just had their swimsuit competition over in Houma. On Friday, well attended, a lot of fun, and congratulations to the winner. Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey. Again, we've got two NBA games tonight on the docket, so that's a great place to go and watch all the games. Have a great dinner. The wings are outstanding, and everything is right there in place at the new, renovated, bigger, better than ever Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Again, the big news, if you're an LSU baseball fan, Cole Henry won't travel to Arkansas this week. That coming from Paul Maneri's mouth. He'll be without the young ace for the third consecutive weekend as LSU is struggling, trying to hang in there. On the outside, looking in to host as one of the top 16 seeds out there, currently at number 19 in the RPI. They need some work to be done in order to get things happening. Very seldom do you have to go on the road for a regional, win that one, and then go on the road again for a super regional. But we'll see. Two weekend series left to go. But as Ben McDonald said, you can't sleep on Louisiana Tech. They're one of the better teams in the state, and they're coming into town for a Tuesday night. Again, Tuesday night, it'll be right here on 103.7 The Game. That LSU flies out to Fayetteville for a Thursday, Friday, Saturday in Arkansas. And all of those games, of course, here on your source for LSU Sports, 103.7 The Game. History lesson time. It was on this day May the 6th, the year 1993, Shaquille O'Neal was named Rookie of the Year. He then became the first rookie to be voted an All-Star starter since Michael Jordan back in 1985. The Big Diesel, the Big Aristotle, averaging as a rookie 23.5 points per game, 13.9 rebounds per game, 3.5 block shots a night. What an impact player for the Orlando Magic. My man, Shaquille O'Neal, named Rookie of the Year. It was a no-brainer, no doubter. Absolutely. All right, birthday wishes. If today is your birthday, man, we wish you the happiest, happiest, happiest of birthdays. And hope you have a lot of cake, a lot of ice cream, and a lot of fun. You share it with the likes of two former LSU football players, the Salmon Slinger, Alan Risher, celebrating a birthday today, and just signed a nice contract with the Oakland Raiders. A happy birthday to Foster Moreau. Foster Moreau, congratulations and happy birthday to all of them from all of us. Yes, indeed. Special thanks to all of our guests. Ben McDonald, kind enough to join us. We talked beach volleyball. We did that. And we talked about the strangest ending to a horse race with our good friend Michael Baychuk. CD, job well done, my friend, as always. Tomorrow, we'll preview LSU and Louisiana Tech, recap the NBA playoffs, talk a little LSU football. How important is that game in Austin, Texas? We'll debate that as well. Thanks to all of you for listening, to our partners that make it possible. Each and every day, you are the very, very best. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty. Bumper to Bumper Sports, next. Now the rain.